I always have disclaimers, and so the disclaimer is this today. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in our country, in our community, in our world. So I just want to name that and acknowledge that gently, that many of us are coming and arriving this morning with a sense of uncertainty, maybe some fear, some heaviness. It's all shaped by what's going on around the world, Venezuela, Greenland, our country. I acknowledge that the person that I'm sharing about today, the saint, this mystic, what seems like a companion to me, as desperate as I am to share this with you, I acknowledge my own, experience right now and the way that I'm showing up, and I can feel the tension and the tightness in me. And it feels almost cheap, if I'm being honest with you, it feels almost cheap to talk about something different today than what's actually happening in the world. And so I just want to acknowledge that. As we start, I'd like to invite you guys to get comfortable. I'd ask if, man, just for the next 30 to 40 minutes, if we can just try to be as distraction-free as possible. I know for some of you it might be hard not to have your phone, maybe you use it for notes, but I'd encourage you to just be present and put them away. So maybe if we can just start in silence and find our center. And so God, I confess that it is really hard to be focused and present right now. When there's so much unnecessary pain and suffering and division and distraction and destruction. God, I can feel it coursing through my body, this uneasiness. I confess that I'm conflicted. There are so many crying out to you right now, asking why. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to my family, to my community? Spirit of God, I pray that you would move us from a place of why is this happening into a place of empowerment where we ask you, how do we navigate this chaos? How do we navigate the evil? How do I continue to look at somebody who hates me and try to find a sense of love towards them? God, you are creation itself. You are creativity. You are artistic. So I pray that you would inspire us to be creative artists of renewal, artists of restoration. I pray that we would be artists of forgiveness. Divine breath, it's so easy right now to look at everybody else and why they are the problem. Give us the courage and the strength needed to recognize that I'm the problem. The same hatred and division and distraction that is in me is in them. And so deal with the division and the destruction in my own mind. God, I don't want to be a passive observer. May we use our life, our breath, the spark of yours. May we use it to illuminate the path of peace, to illuminate the path of forgiveness, until all things might recognize their oneness and their unity in you. Forgive me for participating in the division. Forgive me when I access my lower brain and I start doing the us and them game. But increase my capacity, increase our capacity to love. Increase our capacity to experience peace. May all those in pain and suffering right now experience your peace. May the peacemakers rise up. May faith leaders of every tradition rise up. And when the old powers crumble, may they turn to compost for something new and beautiful. Amen. This lesson today, let me back up. Hi, I'm Wayne. One of your pastors here, one of the teachers here on the teaching team. We're in a series right now on saints and mystics, people who've spoken to us, who have been companions on our own journey and our own path. And so I'm going to start today. This feels like an assignment from my schooling that I'm doing right now, in the most beautiful and positive way. So I'm excited to share with you the report that I've written on a fellow by the name of John O'Donohue. I'm going to start with a poem of his, and I just ask again, just for a moment, if you can try to be as present as possible, no distractions, put your phones away, please. So I'm going to begin by reading a poem that was read to us on the very first day of my training in the art of spiritual direction. It's a poem by today's subject matter, John O'Donohue, and it's called For a New Beginning. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness grow inside of you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered. It heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, and wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight, when your courage kindled, and you stepped out onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's dreams, desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. And soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits for you. Let's just sit with that for a second. When I first encountered the work of John O'Donohue, I had the sense of meeting someone who had learned how to listen, not just to ideas, but to the land, and how to listen to silence and to the deeper movements of the soul. He was born on New Year's Day in 1956 in County Clare on the western edge of Ireland, and he often spoke about how growing up in the Burren shaped him. I imagine a handful of you in here might know that place. It's a stark limestone landscape, ancient and open to the Atlantic winds. For him, that place was not a backdrop. It was formative. It taught him early on that the world is alive with presence and that the mystery is something to be lived inside of, not solved. Growing up with the Celtic spiritual tradition, he inherited a way of seeing the world where the sacred was not set apart from ordinary life, but woven through it. In that tradition, the world is not divided neatly into sacred and secular. God was not understood as distant or elsewhere, but as intimately present in land and water, in friendship and silence, in the rhythms of daily life. This panentheistic sensibility, the sense that the divine is in all things without being contained by them, gave him a framework where reverence came naturally and where the boundary between the visible and invisible was thin. Those are the cutest little sounds. Oh my goodness. It's wonderful. That way of seeing would stay with him. Long before he had language for mysticism, he was already being formed by a world where stone, sea, and sky carried meaning, and where presence mattered more than explanation. It was this Celtic vision, spacious, relational, and deeply incarnational, that would later blossom into the mysticism he became known for, a spirituality rooted not in the escape from the world, but in deeper participation in it. He entered the Catholic priesthood young, studying English philosophy and theology at Maynooth. He was ordained in 1979. For nearly 20 years, he lived and worked within the structures of the church. Even then, his spirituality was oriented towards intimacy, toward a God who was near and inward and deeply relational. And yet, alongside that closeness, he carried a restlessness, a sense that the inherited language alone couldn't fully hold the depth of what he was experiencing. That questioning eventually led him to Germany in the 1980s, where he pursued doctoral studies in philosophical theology, focusing on the work of George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. I resisted the temptation to do a silly accent there. Hegel's vision of reality as something that unfolds through tension and contradiction and becoming gave O'Donohue language for what he already sensed spiritually. That life is not static, that identity is not fixed, and that the soul is deeper than our biography. There is, he came to believe, a hidden coherence within us that remains untouched by time, success, or failure. Over time, the language and structures that had once held his faith began to feel too tight. Not wrong, just no longer fitting. It was as though the clothes that had once served him well could no longer move with the life that was growing inside him. He found himself standing at a threshold, aware that what had formed deeply could no longer hold the breadth of what he was being drawn toward. Leaving the priesthood for him was not a loss of faith, but an act of honesty, a way of trusting that God was larger than any single framework, and that the spiritual life sometimes requires new language, new space, new clothes, so that the soul can keep breathing. From there, O'Donohue devoted himself fully to writing, teaching, and speaking as a poet and a mystic. He's got a handful of books out there. I only have three up on the screen, but some of his books, Anamkara, Eternal Echoes, Divine Beauty, continue to find their way into the hands of people who are tired of living on the surface of things and are longing for a faith spacious enough to breathe. As his work matured, his voice became less that of a theologian explaining ideas and more that of a companion naming experience. He spoke often about the inner landscape, the unseen terrain of memory, longing, fear, and hope that each of us carries. He believed much of our suffering comes from losing touch with this interior world, from moving too fast and from forgetting how to be still. Beauty for him was not about glamour or aesthetics or likes, but about remembering, a way the soul slowly comes home to itself. In his later years, he became especially known for his blessings, words shaped to accompany people through thresholds, grief, aging, friendship, love, endings, sounds of new beginnings. He understood that these moments don't need to be rushed or explained away. They need to be honored. They need to be held, and they need to be named with care. John O'Donohue died suddenly in 2008 at the age of 52 from a heart attack while traveling in France. His death felt abrupt and unfinished, and yet his words continue to travel like he did. They seem to find people precisely when they are standing on their own edges. That's my story. For many of us, he remains an Anamkara, which is Gaelic for a soul friend or a soul companion, reminding us that silence is not empty, solitude is not abandonment, and that the deepest work of the spiritual life often happens quietly within. As we sit with this journey, it might be worth noticing and pausing where we ourselves have felt the edges of a faith or a framework that no longer quite fits. Not as something to agree with or to resolve, to fix, but simply to listen for what might be awakening with us. So let's just do that now. Let's pause for a moment. Where might you notice feeling the edges of a faith or an old framework, an old way of seeing the world that no longer quite fits? I'm not asking for you to find the story and the why and the how and how to fix it. Just acknowledge it. If we can't see it, we can't do anything with it. So personally, I didn't come to study the art of spiritual direction because I was looking for new ideas about God. I came because the language and frameworks I had already had were no longer giving me room to breathe. Long before I had words for any of this, my earliest encounters with the sacred weren't conceptual at all. They happened outside, in land, in silence, in moments where something larger than me felt close without announcing itself. I didn't think of it as God at the time. It was just presence, mystery. a sense that the world was alive and that I was somehow being met by it. But that didn't necessarily infiltrate my Presbyterian upbringing. As I got older, the sense of mystery didn't go away, but I began to chase it through more formal paths: theology, scripture, study, language. I pursued the divine the way many of us are taught, through clarity, coherence, and understanding. And for a long time, that path served me well. I learned how to think carefully about God. I learned how to teach, how to explain, how to hold things together in ways that made sense to others. But something along the way, something subtle began to happen. The framework that had once helped me name the mystery started to feel tight. Not wrong, not bad, just constricting. The questions I was carrying had outgrown the containers that I had been given. And the more I grew, the more I noticed how much energy it took to keep everything neatly aligned. What I wasn't looking for was a new belief system. What I was longing for was space. Studying the art of spiritual direction entered my life not as a solution, but as a kind of refuge. Thank you, Ginny, for pointing me in the right direction. It felt like an island, a place for theological misfits, for those of us who loved God deeply but no longer fit easily inside inherited and tribal categories. It felt like a homecoming, a place where mystery wasn't something to solve, but something to sit beside. Sorry, this is very tender to me. Where silence wasn't avoidance, but wisdom. And where questions didn't disqualify you, they initiated you. It also felt like being welcomed into a family, one rich with ancestral wisdom, a lineage of mystics, poets, wanderers, saints, and seekers who had learned to trust experience as much as explanation. People who knew that the soul doesn't unfold on a syllabus and that God is often encountered sideways through beauty and grief and land and love and loss. It was during that season, as I was learning to slow down, to listen, and to be present to my own interior landscape, that I encountered John O'Donohue in a deeper way. His words didn't give me answers, they gave me companionship. When he spoke about silence, I recognized it. When he spoke about thresholds and homecoming, I felt seen. When he spoke about the inner landscape, it wasn't something I needed to learn, it was something I was remembering. John began to feel like an Anamkara to me. A soul companion. Someone walking alongside me, not ahead of me. Someone who didn't rush me towards conclusions, but helped me stay with the questions long enough for something honest to emerge. His language gave me permission. Permission to trust my experience. Permission to let my faith remain alive and unfinished. Permission to believe that God is larger than any framework that arises and tries to contain the mystery. And so when I share his work with you, I'm not offering him as an authority to follow or a thinker to agree with. I'm offering him as a companion. Someone who might keep you company in your own listening, in your own unknowing, and in your own becoming. Because what I've learned slowly is that the spiritual life is not about tightening our grip on certainty. It's about learning how to belong to ourselves, to the world, and to that quiet divine presence that has been with us all along. Throughout this two-year program, I've spent a long time with John's work, and there were a few places where I kept finding myself returning, almost without trying. One of them was his book, Anamkara. I didn't read it as a text to master although I had to write a few papers on it. I read it slowly, almost devotionally. What struck me wasn't just the idea of spiritual friendship, but the tenderness with which he spoke about it. The sense that our deepest growth doesn't happen alone, and it doesn't happen through self-improvement, but through being seen, accompanied, and named with care. For John, an anamkara wasn't someone who fixed you or guided you from above. It was someone who walked with you, who helped you trust what was already alive in you. That resonated deeply with me, especially as I was learning spiritual direction, which is a way of being with others that isn't about advice or answers, but about presence, listening, and reverence for the soul's unfolding. He also often spoke about solitude and interior space, not as isolation, but as a place of recovery. In it, he writes, "When you cease to fear your solitude, a new creativity awakens in you. Your forgotten or neglected wealth begins to reveal itself. You come home to yourself and learn to rest within." Those lines felt true in my own journey. It named the shift from filling every silence with explanation to trusting that something meaningful could emerge when I stopped striving. It helped me see that creativity, spiritual creativity, is not born from effort, but from listening. And then there was the way that he spoke about creativity. John believed that every human being is an artist. Not because we all paint or write poetry, God bless those of you that do, but because we are always participating in the shaping of our lives, the way we respond to grief, the way that we love, the way we move through time. Living itself, he said, is a creative act. That idea quietly undid me. It reframed my spiritual life, not as something to perfect, but something to participate in. It suggested that faith isn't about getting it right, but about staying open and responsive to beauty, to pain, to change, to what is trying to come into being through us. And then there are his blessings. Toward the end of his life, John began writing blessings for thresholds, again, for endings and beginnings, grief, love, and change. One of the most well-known comes from one of his books, To Bless the Space Between Us, where he writes, "May you recognize in your life the presence, power, and light of your soul. May you realize that you are never alone, that your soul and its brightness and belonging connects you intimately with the rhythm of the universe." These words moved from being a blessing on a page I was reading, and I began to hear them as from an encouraging friend, as someone standing beside you, reminding you of something you may have forgotten, or maybe something you've never fully trusted about yourself. When I say that John became an anamkara for me, this is what I mean. Not a teacher standing at a distance, but a voice walking alongside me, a soul friend whose words kept me company, helping me to trust silence, to honor thresholds, and to stay faithful to the mystery that first drew me toward God in the first place. And that's the spirit I want us to carry as we move forward, not trying to grasp or analyze, but simply allowing these words and the silence around them to meet us where we are. I want to return as we close to a part of the poem that we began with. Not to repeat it, but to listen again from where we are right now. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in the risk. And soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. Can we just sit in silence for a second with that last line? For your soul senses the world that awaits you. A lot of us are sitting in hopelessness and despair and pain, and it's justified and valid. When you sit, what is your soul sense that is awaiting for you? One of the questions we sometimes ask ourselves in silence and contemplation in my studies is, what is my soul's work to do? What is my soul's work to do right now? Maybe for you that's rest. Maybe it's learning how to say no to some things. There's a concept of the golden shadow, this aspect of ourselves that we're afraid of our power, of our strength. Maybe there's an inner warrior. Maybe you're still trying to find your voice right now in the midst of all the chaos that's going on. The answers might not be found in another book or in another lecture, but they might be found from just being silent and sitting with it. You carry the Christ with you, each of you. That's an empowering statement. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk, and soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. And now, if it's okay, I've written a little O'Donohue-inspired blessing for us today in our time together. So I'll end with this, and maybe I'll see some of you upstairs in a little bit. May you trust the quiet beginnings that are already stirring in you. May you be given moments of steadiness when the world feels uncertain. And may you find yourself gently held by the deeper rhythm of life. Thanks.